Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on General Government. Today is April 11, 2017. And today we are going to be doing a possible reconsideration and work session to kick this thing off. We'll be opening a possible reconsideration and work session on SB 5501. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the committee's information, a possible reconsideration and work session is used to indicate that the committee may reconsider its past actions on a bill only if that bill hasn't been heard in full committee and is therefore still assigned to the subcommittee. Usually it only occurs if there was an error in the paperwork. In this case, in the work session for the bill on April 5th, the LFO recommendation meeting materials that were posted to OLIS that day didn't have the work session presentation paperwork included in them. That is now included in the paperwork online in OLIS on pages 3 through 5 is that document. And then also on the memo that day, the memo reported that the budget represented a negative 3.8% change from the 17-19 current service level. The budget actually represents a negative 5.6 change from the adjusted current service level. So there's no change to the KPM recommendation that was adopted by the committee, no change to the amendment, which provided the general fund appropriation and other funds limitation. The dollars are still the same. Just wanted to make sure that you have the correct paperwork in front of you before we do this.
Okay, so is that the magic number that we need?
Yeah, we do. What we can do is...
So I guess we can recess this until we have... another House member.
Or can you call and just find them?
Yeah. We're okay, aren't we? We have three.
Do we need four?
We need
four.
Really?
Two-thirds.
No, well, who are we? Don't we have two? What is two-thirds? Two-thirds, six?
For reconsideration?
Two-thirds for a reconsideration.
Oh, for a reconsideration.
Two-thirds of both sides? Two-thirds. We've got two-thirds total.
Wait, you've got three-thirds of your side, and we've got three-fourths of our side, so we've got...
Three-fifths
of our side.
She's working off the rules book.
60% and not 66.7%. So someone was prepared.
Someone calling Rep. Gomberg.
Gomberg went to testify someplace.
Yeah, he'll be back in a couple minutes.
Can we do the public hearing on the tax practitioners?
Yeah, so I can recess this and then we'll pick it back up.
That sounds good.
So what we're going to do is that we're going to research the possible reconsideration of the work session for SB 5501, and we will pick it back up once we have the appropriate number of members. So now I want to open up a public hearing on SB 5538, Board of Tax Petitioner, Mr. Howard Moyer.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is a phase two presentation from the Board of Tax Practitioners. They were previously before the committee on March 1st for their phase one budget overview. As noted on March 1st in the LFO budget review document under other significant issues, there was a note of concern regarding the licensees for this agency that have continued to decrease, and that the state should consider the possibility that the licensee base and therefore the revenues generated to support the agency could very well diminish below levels that support a solvent standalone agency, and there's concern that maybe legislative action or direction might be needed in the future.
Okay. And without further ado, sir.
Good afternoon,
Co-Chair Manning and members of the committee. Again, for the record, my name is Howard Moyes. I'm the director of the Oregon Board of Tax Practitioners, and it's good to see all of you again. I have a very brief presentation for you this afternoon. Want to go over four things very briefly. I'll try to keep this to about 10 or 15 minutes. I know you have other business you'd like to get to. Just want to give you a current outlook on what our 2015-17 budget looks like as of today, some budget trends and drivers for the future, future projections on where we anticipate our budget being in the next 4 years, and also just real quickly overview of some of our goals and strategies. This is a picture of our current 2015-17 budget. I'm not going to go into this in a lot of detail. Just wanted to put this up in case you all have any questions. Key things I wanted to point out is that our legislatively adopted budget had us coming in at a ending balance of about 4.73 months. Our current projection as of last month is that we'll end the biennium with about 6.36 months. So we've done quite a bit of cost cutting in this biennium, even though our revenues are coming in significantly less than what we had anticipated.
Senator Johnson.
Could you give us an example of some of the cost-cutting measures that you've put in place?
Of course. Co-Chair Manning and Senator Johnson, we've done a few things. One is we've reduced our FTEs already from 4 to 3. We had a vacant position, and we basically just rolled that position in with our existing staff, reallocated workloads. So that's one of the most significant cost savings that we had so far this biennium. Another thing we did, and I think I mentioned this last time I was here, is that we've reduced our office space. Our footprint is down by over 30%, and so our lease costs are down about 31% so far this biennium, and that'll be going forward. We've got a new database that allows us to streamline operations. We're now able to do a lot more things electronically instead of having to use a lot of paper. And a few other things, but we've really streamlined operations. We've automated processes as much as possible. We've reduced our staff, and we have a much smaller office.
I guess the thing that I just want to reflect on is I don't know why we always wait, and it's not just you guys, but why we always wait until there's a budget crisis to do what suggests best business practices. You're about the third agency that I've heard from that said, oh, we've saved all this money. We've got a much smaller footprint. Why didn't somebody look around and say, gee, do we need all these people? Do we need all this space before it was an exigent situation?
I really can't answer that. I've only been with the board for a little less than 2 years.
That's my absolute least favorite answer. Blame the dead guy. I just can't stand that. But in the 2 years that you were there, have you been responsible for instituting these changes?
Because
I want to give you accolades if you have.
Yes, all these changes were as a result of initiatives we put in place since I came on board on June 1st of 2015. And again, part of it is I like to think, you know, this is the way we would operate anyways, because I do believe in operating efficiently, whether it's a government agency or a private company, doesn't matter. I think any organization should be as efficient as it possibly can while maintaining an excellent level of service, and I believe we've done both. And the fact that we did have a little bit of a budget challenge, just, you know, we might have done some things maybe a little quicker than I would have otherwise. But we did get a little bit fortunate that we did have a vacant position, and we were able to take advantage of that and reallocate some workload. Otherwise, I would, you know, I'd hate to have to say we lay somebody off. That's never a good situation. But so we did take advantage of some things that happened surreptitiously. But I think, you know, overall, we're doing what we need to do.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yeah, I want to follow up on Senator Johnson's comment. You know, we had a few weeks back the director of the Construction Contractors Board, and in my view, this is a fellow who really did it right. This is a fellow who came in, said, what do we need? What do we not need? Got rid of inefficiency, and actually ended up letting some of his staff through attrition go. And I'm not suggesting that for you as well, but I strongly concur with what Senator Johnson's saying. It seems like whenever we get into a budget crunch, that's when we hear the statement. We don't hear it when times are good of we're reevaluating our process. So I would just have a strong recommendation that you keep on your path of looking for those efficiencies, looking for best practices, not only now, but also during good times.
Senator DeBoer.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I'd like to thank you and congratulate you on what you've done. So, great job.
Thank you. I appreciate appreciate it. Well, that's the end of my presentation.
Senator Johnson.
One other thing that I want to point out is that I have budgeted in private business and I've budgeted in public. And there are all these little artifices that are at play in a public budget. You had a vacancy that you were hanging on to and did in the nomenclature of Ways and Means what we call burn the vacancy. So you were allowed, I mean, you shepherded an unfilled position through and took that money and put it someplace else. One of the things that some of us have been trying to do is to ferret out these unfilled vacancies so that we get to a more truthful budgeting picture. And I'm not suggesting you've done anything bad. You're following lots and lots of your sister agencies and colleagues in shepherding these vacancies and using them in other ways. I'm just saying to folks who may be starting their Ways and Means career and spending a lot of time in Ways and Means that vacancies matter, and rooting them out. You had one. Some agencies have 300. And I just think it's something that we ought to be vigilant about to make sure that we've got as close to accurate accounting practices as we can have. And again, I want to say clearly on the record, you didn't do anything wrong or shady or bad. You employed techniques that have been used in state government for a really long time. I'm just questioning, particularly in very austere budget times, whether or not that is a good practice.
No, I understand. Thank you, Senator. And I should probably clarify, we didn't have the vacant position when I took over in June of 2015. We were fully staffed. I don't want to get into a lot of details, but one of the first things I did is we had our first budget meeting in July of 2015. I mentioned to the board at that time that based on the little information I'd been able to gather in a few weeks is that we had a pretty significant budget issue facing us. And so we took the steps at that time to look at what the agency needed to be in order to be sustainable long term. We started doing that in July of 2015. At that time, we started talking to staff saying, look, we're going to need to move from four FTEs to three or maybe even 2.5 in the future. And so we were able to work with the individual that was in one of those positions. She actually got a promotion, which is great. Like I said, everything worked out beautifully. But I just wanted to clarify, we didn't have a vacant position to play with. We were proactively trying to get to this point from the get-go.
Thank you. I stand corrected, and I appreciate your leadership and foresight to see that you had a problem and that the stars aligned to fix it. So I acknowledge your leadership at the agency, and I stand corrected.
No, that's fine. Thank you. So if there's not any other questions on that slide, just put this slide together just to give you, a kind of historical picture of what our revenues and expenses have been over time. I won't spend a lot of time here. Just real briefly, you can see in the last decade, it was all rainbows and unicorns for the most part. Our revenues were increasing every year. Expenses were increasing every year as well, but revenues far exceeded expenses. That started to turn around about 2010, 2011. I'll talk about that a little bit more. But just so you can see, the path that we're on has been a little up and down. It hasn't been a steady, direction at all over the past 10 or 15 years. But you can see starting in 15-17 in this biennium, even though our expenses in some categories increased significantly, that's why we tried to start getting a rein on that. And I'll talk about that more in just a minute. But just to give you an idea of the composition of our revenue, for the most part, it's all licensing fees. About 95 to 97% of all of our revenue comes from licensing fees. That's individuals and businesses. The second piece is civil penalties. That generally ranges between $50,000 and $80,000 over a biennium. And then we get a couple thousand dollars just in other, miscellaneous income, whether it's interest or just, a few things here and there. So for the most part, it's licensing fees. And you'll see how that's changed overall the last few years. This is a picture of our active licensees over that time. So, again, it pretty much correlates with the revenue picture that I showed a couple slides earlier. You'll see that from 2005 until 2010, our licensee numbers increased fairly steadily. And then starting in 2011, they started going down. There's probably several reasons for that, but one of the reasons is we tend to be a counter-cyclical agency in terms of the economy. We have a lot of part-time jobs. When the economy's not doing so well, a lot of folks look to tax preparation work as an extra source of income, something to, you know, to kind of get by. As the economy improves, they go and they find full-time jobs or other opportunities. So as the economy improves, we tend to have fewer licensees. As the economy isn't doing so well, we tend to get a few more. So obviously the economy's been doing pretty well the last few years, and that's one of the reasons our numbers are going down. Frankly, it's not the only reason. Another reason our numbers are going down is a lot of our licensees are at retirement age, and so quite a few of them have been retiring over the last few years. But we are seeing a lot of younger folks joining the profession now, which is good. I put this slide together just to kind of wrap up what I mentioned on some of the previous slides. It's a little busy, but again, just wanted to show you in one slide what our budget history has been since 2003, 2005, and some of the significant factors that have affected our budget and some of our key budget drivers. I won't go through everything. Basically, what I have in green, that's a positive to the budget. That means that it's either helped increase revenues or it's helped decrease expenses. Anything in red is the opposite. It's either decreased revenues or increased expenses. So there's been a few things going on over the years. We had a bit of a fund sweep in 2009, 2011. Our licensee numbers, as I mentioned, started declining in about 2010, 2011. We had a temporary fee decrease a few years ago, which has been reversed. We had some significant increases in fees that we've absorbed the last few years. So all of that boils down to where we are now. As I mentioned on my first slide, our projection is to end the current biennium with a little over 6 months of an ending balance. I just put in here what our 2017-19 CSL is or was or would have been. Had we stayed on the path we were on with not addressing some of the cost of the agency, we were looking at a negative fund balance of a little over 3 months at the end of 17-19.
Two things, a question and a comment. If you could detail some of the significant increase in state service charges, that always strikes me as problematic, having run a small agency in another life. You just get these increases. You're not asked to participate in the decision about it. And in my case, back a million years ago, they just grabbed it out of the agency checking account, DAS did, which made managing a budget damn near impossible. So that's the first one. The second thing is that I think the legislature needs to own the fact that we have come into some of these agencies and stolen your money. We had the real estate board in front of us in another committee. And they were talking about how lean things were and felt, I guess, constrained, not to mention that one of the reasons that they needed a fee increase was that we'd come in and pilfered their money. And we did the same thing to you. And I'm glad that you displayed it up there because we ought to own that.
Right.
But talk about the increase in the state service charges, if you would.
Okay. Sure. There's a few of our service charges that increased. The one that increased most significantly was our help desk support. It's the support that DAS provides for our computers in the office. Basically, they manage, you know, anything that goes wrong. We need new software, that type of thing. Those costs tripled from 13-15 to 15-17. We were charged about $800 or $900 a month. In 13-15, for 15-17, they went up to just under 2,000.
Did you ask for more help? Did you have more broken computers, or it was just because that you got the increases?
I don't know. Like I said, those decisions were made before I came on board, and I just inherited them.
Okay.
But, you know, that was a significant increase. Some of the other costs increased as well for networking services and, you know, other IT-related things like that. But a lot of so those were service charges. I think the state fees, those remained relatively constant as far as I can tell. They might have changed a little bit, but not too much. I will say with Roberts here and Krista that they were a big help to me going through this budget process, because I was asking some of those exact same questions, and I wasn't always the easiest person to deal with as a result of the increase in those costs, but they were very professional and very helpful, so I want to publicly recognize them for that, and they were a tremendous help. So I hope I answered your question.
You did.
Again, if you have any more questions about this, I'll be happy to go into them. But I think the key point I wanted to make here is that, you know, again, our CSL was coming in at a negative 3 months. We have turned that around to where the governor's recommended budget has us at a positive 3.6. I will say that this is a somewhat pessimistic or conservative estimate on our part. You'll see that I'm assuming that our licensees continue to decrease at about a 2% clip a year. We are taking steps to mitigate that and hopefully actually increase the number of our licensees. But I didn't want you to think that I presented some type of rosy picture that, you know, has no chance of actually coming to fruition. I think this is a fairly conservative estimate. And even with that, we're coming in at 3.6 months, and I hope we can do better. Then we're also looking forward to 2019 and 2021. We do anticipate at that time we are going to have to raise fees. So I've attempted to estimate that with some inflation and, again, a negative scenario in terms of number of licensees. So that, again, under that pessimistic picture, we have right now a projected ending balance of right about 5 months for the 19-21 biennium. Just two more slides real briefly. This is essentially the information that was on the spreadsheet, just in graphical format, so you can see our fund balance and how it's changed over time. Finally, one of the questions that we get is, well, your licensee numbers have been going down, you know, are you sustainable as a result? So I wanted to put this slide in to show that here, you know, we're on the far left, tax practitioners. We have just under 3,500 licensees, and I just compared this to some of the other smaller agencies in the state. So we're at about 3,500. There's other successful agencies that have about half that, and then there's some that are almost at a third. So, again, I don't think it's an issue of not having enough licensees. I think it's an issue of just having our revenues and expenses aligned appropriately, and that's what we're focusing on now. The final thing I'll say before I get to my final slide is just sort of back to one of the questions about what we've done in terms of expenses and streamlining the operation, and why did we focus on that? I think that's an important question. I think typically what would happen in these situations is that the first thing a lot of folks would do is to ask for a fee increase, because it was obvious we had a budget imbalance. One of the significant reasons for that was because our revenues were going down, as I showed you. So it would have been reasonable if we just asked for a fee increase last year or the year before or even this year. But again, the reason we didn't is because we wanted to operate more efficiently. We knew we could, we knew we had to, and we knew how to do it. So that's what we focused on. We're holding the fee increase as a trump card. I've estimated we don't need that until 2019, but, you know, if things don't work out the way we think they will, you know, we can pull that card out 6 months from now, a year from now. And that'll easily address whatever other issues we might have. So I think the bottom line here is that we've made significant progress in a relatively short period of time. We have sufficient fund balances going forward. There's obviously still some challenges that remain with, you know, number of licensees, and we still don't know exactly what some of our costs are going to be in the next biennium. However, we do have a solid plan. I think we've demonstrated that we know how to operate efficiently. We have a firm understanding of the challenges that we face, and we have a plan in place to address them. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Representative Nerman.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And I have several questions based on email conversation that I had with Director Moyes, which I copied you and Co-Chair Smith on also. So, and I appreciate your answers to my questions, and I appreciate the promptness of it, too. And I think your answers were sufficient. There's some of them I just want to just get on the record. So there's a currently administrative rule that requires tax preparers to do 360 hours of what you call it, service under a tax consultant, experience work under a tax consultant before they can themselves become a tax consultant. And the administrative rule, you said that you got it amended to 360 hours. I think the one I looked up said, I think, 700 and something hours.
780.
780 hours. So, and there's litigation over that right now. And so I'm wondering, what's the purpose of this this work to do 360 hours? This is over and above having passed the exam to become a tax consultant. So can you explain why that?
Sure, Representative Nierman, I'd be happy to. Just to clarify, again, we've got two levels of licensure. Our entry level is called the licensed tax preparer. That's somebody with no experience. They basically take an 80-hour course, tax course. Then they have to pass a state-administered exam. If they do those two things, they can apply for licensure as a preparer. One thing preparers need to do is to work under the supervision of somebody who's more experienced, and that would be a tax consultant. Sometimes it's a CPA or an attorney, but most of the times it's a tax consultant. Tax consultants generally have to have at least 1,100 hours of experience, and I'll explain the difference in just a minute. But tax consultants have to have at least 1,100 hours of experience, and then they have to pass a much more challenging exam, a state-administered exam. If they do those two things, if they have the experience, if they pass the exam, then they can apply to be a tax consultant, which allows them to work independently or to supervise others. There's sort of a third category out there of folks that are called enrolled agents. An enrolled agent designation is something that the IRS provides. They've got their own exams. An enrolled agent is somebody typically who is allowed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. It doesn't necessarily mean they prepare tax returns. It could just be that they represent folks that are being audited or they have some other issue with the IRS and they need somebody to represent them on their behalf. So we have enrolled agents out there, and the board wanted to try to find a way to recognize the fact that they do have some tax knowledge, but not necessarily any experience preparing tax returns. The board was concerned that if they just granted these folks a tax consultant license without any experience, that wasn't necessarily in the best interest of consumers in Oregon, because they would be going to somebody that they would think would have a lot of experience when they didn't necessarily have that. So back in 2013, the board developed a rule that said, okay, tax preparers typically need 1,100 hours, but if you're an enrolled agent, we recognize that you've taken some exams, you have a lot of federal tax knowledge. We are only going to require you to have 360 hours of work experience. If you can demonstrate that you have 360 hours of work experience preparing taxes, and mostly that was to make sure they understood Oregon tax law, because the IRS doesn't really care about Oregon tax law. If they could demonstrate that 360 hours and pass the consultant exam, they could get their tax consultant's license. That rule was challenged because the state Oregon Society of Enrolled Agents preferred not to have any work experience requirement for enrolled agents. So that's really the issue in the rule challenge right now. The board, recognizing that there was some room in the rule to make it easier or have fewer impediments for enrolled agents, they amended the rule last year. It actually took effect in February 2017. What they did is they said, okay, if you're an enrolled agent and you don't have any experience, under the old rule, we required you to have experience in order to get a tax consultant's license. Well, you couldn't get experience because you didn't have a license, so it's kind of a catch-22. So the board recognized that, and they said, okay, if you're an enrolled agent, if you take what we call our state-only consultant exam, it's just a 50-question exam, and it's all on Oregon tax law and theory. If you take that exam and you pass it, we will give you a tax preparer's license. And that would allow you to practice in Oregon. It'll allow you to get 360 hours of experience. And then once you have your 360 hours of experience, you don't even need to take the test again because you've already passed it. All you need to do is apply for your tax consultant's license, and you're good to go. The board thought that was a good compromise. Again, protected consumers, but also allowed enrolled agents with no experience to actually get the experience and become a tax consultant. So that's kind of where we are now. The rule is still with the courts. There was an appellate court decision a few months back that was not in favor of the board. Right now, the issue is with the Department of Justice and the board discussing, you know, what to do next. Sorry, keep hitting the keyboard there. So I hope that answered your question. It's a little confusing just because of all the different licenses, but that's where we are.
Sure. Can I follow? Yeah. So the decision to engage in to defend the administrative rule, was that done by you or by the board?
That's not by me. It's from the board. The board are the decision-making folks. I just sort of run the operation. So, you know, those types of decisions are made by the board. And frankly, they're made by the Department of Justice as well. The Department of Justice is the attorney for the board, and they have a fairly large say in, you know, defending rules and also whether to continue an appeal. So it was a joint decision between the board and the Department of Justice.
So do you have – can I follow again? So do you have any added cost to your agency because of this lawsuit then? In other words, is the Department of Justice billing you for their time, or does this just come out of your normal assessment?
Thank you. It's not really costing us anything per se. The Department of Justice does keep track, like all attorneys do, of how many hours, you know, they bill on this, and we do get an accounting on a monthly basis. However, one of the things we did is we entered into a flat fee agreement with the Department of Justice a couple of years ago, shortly after I came on board, and this isn't something unique that we do. This is something that the Department of Justice offers smaller agencies because they realize our resources are limited, but they might need some significant legal assistance at some point in the future. So we have a flat fee agreement with them where we pay them the same amount every month. I think it's $3,000, $3,500, somewhere around there. And that basically gives us all the legal services we need, whether it's 2 hours a month or 200 hours a month. So this rule challenge and any other thing associated with it, whether it's an appeal or whatever, all that's included in the legal fees that are part of our flat fee agreement. So we're not really getting any additional costs. It's just part of our flat fee agreement there. And then we really haven't had any other costs directly from the board because we haven't hired any, you know, consultants or experts or anything like that.
So can I follow one more? So you talked about a decline, I think, since about 2011. Do you think that the administrative rule with the hour requirement for the 780 and then went down to 360, do you think that had anything to do with the decline? Or, and I know you're just conjecture on your part, but you're in a good position to kind of make a judgment on that.
It's possible, but those numbers are so small. We only have about 30 to 40 enrolled agents a year that even take the exam. It's really hard to say. I mean, if it did, it was negligible. However, saying that, we do hope that under the amended rule that just took effect in February, because there are now no barriers to enrolled agents getting a license, assuming they can pass the 50-question exam, that hopefully that, again, will make it a little easier for enrolled agents to become licensees. It'll allow them to get their 360 hours of experience and then become a tax consultant. And one thing that's very clear is that once folks become a tax consultant, they generally stay in the business because it takes a lot of time and effort to get there. They can be successful. They can open their own business, you know, all those types of things. So that's really what we're trying to focus on when we're looking at our licensee numbers, is how do we get more people in to becoming licensed tax consultants. So I think that amended rule, you know, will help. Again, I don't think it's going to be a huge impact either way, but it's a step in the right direction.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further questions from the committee? No further questions? Sir, thank you very much. And we will end the public hearing on SB 5538. Thank you again.
Thank you.
And we will return to we will open up a possible reconsideration and work session on SB 5501. I suggested that we staff, because for the benefit of the committee members that were not present at the time, we'll start at the top. So we'll pass over to staff.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For those that weren't here earlier, a possible reconsideration and work session is used to indicate that a committee may reconsider its past action on a bill only if that bill has been heard, has not been heard in the full committee and is still therefore assigned to the subcommittee. Usually it only occurs if there was an error in the paperwork. In this case, the bill had a work session on the 5th of this month, and in the LFO recommendation meeting materials, there was not the work session presentation report. That report is now contained in pages 3 through 5 in today's work session LFO recommendation materials. And also the memo at that time reported that the budget represented a negative 3.8% change from the 17-19 current service level, and the budget is actually represents a negative 5.6 change from the adjusted current service level. So there's no changes to the KPM recommendations that the committee adopted, no changes to the amendment that committee adopted, which provided the general fund appropriation and other funds limitation. The total dollars within the budget are still the same. We just want to make sure you have the correct paperwork before you.
Okay, the chair requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow a motion to reconsider the vote by which SB 5501 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee. Are there any objections? No objections? The chair will accept the motion to reconsider.
So, Mr. Chair, I move to reconsider the vote by which Senate Bill 5501 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee.
The co-chair has moved to reconsider the vote by which SB 5501 was reported out with a recommendation to the full committee. Are there any objections? Seeing no objections, the motion carries. This seems like it concludes this committee's business for it. Oh, got to go back to that? Okay, I thought you said we'd skip that part. Well, I'm trying to streamline. Well, let's go back through this. Okay.
It's back before the committee now.
All right, so it's back before the committee now.
And just to review for the subcommittee's benefit here, Senate Bill 5501 is the budget bill for the Advocacy Commission's office. The budget, other funds have been reduced to $9,481, which reflects the actual donations collected by the agency based on a 3-biennium average. There's also been $17,000 reduction to account for the consolidation of the commission's website into one web address, having the agency switch to a free conference call system, and converting all cell phones to limited data plans while delaying upgrades. The budget represents a total reduction of 5.6% change from the 17-19 current service level.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, so Mr. Co-Chair, I move the LFO recommendation to Senate Bill 5501.
Mr. Co-Chair Smith has moved the LFO recommendations to SB 5501. Are there any questions? Any objections?
Okay, Mr. Chair. Last one. LFO recommends that Senate Bill 5501, as amended by the -1 amendment, which was previously adopted by a committee, be moved to the Ways and Means Full Committee.
So, Mr. Co-Chair, I move we accept LFO's recommendation.
Mr. Co-Chair Smith has moved that we accept the LFO recommendation to SB 550 to the full Ways and Means Committee. Mm-hmm. Are there any objections? And that concludes our business for today.
Yes.
Okay, so we got through that with a lot of no objections. I appreciate everybody's time. Thank you very much. We will adjourn for the rest of the day and reconvene tomorrow, 1500 hours, 3 o'clock, civilian time. And we are adjourned.
And we have canceled Thursday's meeting.
And we are adjourned.
And we have canceled Thursday's